Hello there, I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. We got my man Rohan here because the Dolphins are flying high. It's the episode before Christmas. Good vibes only, Rohan, even though I'm coming back from the flu. So this is my Michael Jordan moment right now. And I blame Brandon Staley for this, the Chargers. I was not supposed to work on Thursday, right? Thursday was supposed to be a very chill day. And then I get home, throw on the TV. I'm going to have Thursday Night Football on in the background, you know, relaxing. And then I look up at the score and I'm like, okay, you know, Raiders start hot. And then I turn around, you know, get a couple of things together in the kitchen. Look, it's 28-0. And then I'm like, okay, this is getting borderline out of control, right? And then go wrap a couple Christmas gifts for the kids. And then you look back, 42-0 at halftime. And then it's like, okay, red alert, you know, it's going down, time to work. So I didn't get my tight 6.5 hours in that night. And then I think that just downward spiraled me into a point where, my insides just shut down, you know?
Yeah. I think you, like a lot of people, were caught in Brandon Staley's wake, unfortunately. sounds like you're part of a wide swath of collateral damage of the Brandon Staley era in Los Angeles.
I loved that guy. I'm going to miss him. You were in LA when Brandon was there. The technical start to the show. We're going to talk about the Dolphins. We're going to talk about the Bills, how scared Rohan is of the Bills coming for the Dolphins to usurp the division, take it out from underneath them. But you were in LA when Brandon Staley was there. I mean, I loved him. I loved going for it on fourth down and all these wacky different scenarios. I love the hardness of his pregame workouts. Like, you see how hard that guy goes on the field during pregame workouts. And then I'm going to miss him. I really am. I'm truly going to miss him.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, first of all, it's funny that you mentioned being in Los Angeles. The Chargers remain kind of an eighth class citizen in Los Angeles when it comes to sports. The Staley thing is unfortunate. I mean, I liked him too, and he had like a string of bad luck on some of his fourth down decisions. It felt
terrible
like
luck.
It felt like the odds were not in his favor, even though most people agree. I wouldn't say most people. A lot of people would agree that he was making the right decision analytically every time, and he kind of just had a string of bad luck, which happens. It's a high variance sport, you know. And you wrote this, Connor, and it's true. At the end of the day, what's tough is they just weren't able to do anything with Herbert on his rookie contract.
Right.
And I think what's telling is they didn't just fire Brandon Staley. They fired their GM too. Tom Telesco has been there for a really long time, for as long as I can remember. He's been calling the shots in that front office, and they just weren't able to get it done. I mean, with the Quentin Johnston, the rookie receiver, that's been an issue. The defense, I mean, Brandon Staley's supposed to be a defensive guru. They give up 63 points to Aiden O'Connell. It's tough because it's a tough one because I do think he was an interesting coach and I want more coaches like him. And when he would break down some of his fourth down decisions, I thought he did it in an intelligent way, but a lot was going wrong there by the end of his tenure. It's like, also, I just want to say, like, Kellen Moore is just sliding through here. There's just, he's like the backup quarterback right now. It's like no one blames Kellen Moore. It's like, oh, it's the, have you seen that Gordon Ramsay meme on Twitter where it's on one side, it's like him hugging a kid and he's like, oh dear, oh gorgeous, it's okay. And on the other side, it's him yelling and it's just like expletives. He's like, you bleeping donkey, what's wrong with you? That's Kellen Moore versus Brandon Staley, because Kellen Moore was supposed to come in and save this offense,
yes.
Right? They said the offense, you know, wasn't good last year. It was too conservative, blah, blah, blah. Kellen Moore's going to come in there, change the offense. What's happened? The Cowboys offense has taken off, and we'll get to that Cowboys-Bills game. Dak might be the MVP without Kellen Moore. And now Justin Herbert is still not really having a great year, even though I think we all agree he's a very talented quarterback. So I just think it's funny how Kellen Moore has escaped, because he was supposed to be the savior of that offense, and no one's even talking about
him. I know. It is pretty nice, and I do... Like, there's tons of situations in life where the bomb hits and it's partially your fault and you just get to walk away. I do love those. And I am not of a moral fortitude. I don't have that kind of moral fortitude to be like, yeah, you know what, guys, this is partially on me. Like, all coaches say it because you have to say it, but you can tell which guys actually believe right. that it's their right. fault or not.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, it's on all of us, guys, you know.
Right.
But and then they got their phone out and they're texting Albert Breer or Adam Schefter and they're being like, yeah, no, it's actually that guy's fault. But I agree with you. I do think that that whole thing was messed up from the beginning. And what was crazy was, I wrote this after Brandon Staley got fired. So Shane Steichen was the offensive coordinator before you got there. So you could have, and then he took a non-play calling role in Philly. So he left for a demotion, basically, right? So Steichen out the door. After year one, when everyone was, Justin Herbert threw for 5,000 yards with Joe Lombardi that first year. But I think everyone was kind of like, ah, you know, we could do, this could be better. You know, it could look different. And then Frank Smith left, offensive line coach at that point, to go be Mike McDaniel's offensive coordinator, integral part now of what's going on in Miami. And so you had these two guys, and then all along, you were in the Shanahan-McVay clique. You could have had any of those guys. And you stuck with Joe Lombardi, and then you switched to Kellen Moore at the last second, you know, like basically to save the whole ship from sinking. And so to me, it was just like a missed opportunity with the OC. Like, there's a lot of good play callers that came and left that building, and you're just like, yeah, you know, I'm going to stick with
it. Yeah, it's true. Also, like, I don't know. In retrospect, Anthony Lynn, was he that bad? Was he?
Well, that's, I think that all... Like, the Chargers are just always going to be like this. Always. I don't think that they have enough. Like, I don't think that there's enough going on there. Maybe, like, maybe they need to, like, get a better chef or, like, you know, some, like, some comfier airplane seats or something. Like, something, there's something beneath the surface there that causes generations of people to come up just short of a win, right? Like, it has to be more than just like, oh, this coach didn't work hard enough and slept too much. Well, instead of game plan, it's like, no, man, there's something, there's just a little thing in there that you're maybe doing wrong. Like, maybe you're serving like the Tyson nugs and you can go out and get the Applegate Farms nuggets. You know what I mean? Like, you right, can get something right. a little bit healthier.
At least
that
Purdue.
Just puts you,
at least yeah. Purdue.
Yeah, get some Purdue with the 2/3 cups of veggies in every serving, and that way you're powering your players forward, you know? That's what
it's interesting. I do think, even as someone who's a Tua fan that's like very, their agenda is very invested in Justin Herbert's downfall, I do think that having him is still, it's going to be a very attractive coaching destination. I think they can, if they get the right mind in there, I do think that they're capable of taking off. I saw that they're going to be like $30 million over the cap next year, but if they cut like four players, they'll be $20 million under. But that includes Khalil Mack. That might include Joey Bosa. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they reshuffle the deck, but I think it'll be an attractive coaching job. It is. It's wild, though, man. I thought Staley was going to do a really good job there. The downfall came quickly. But it's just baffling to see that Herbert is like a 500 quarterback still at this point in his career. He should be the team should be better when you have a talent like him at QB.
You were the ultimate LA guy, took us on the ultimate LA taco crawl. With that experience in mind, is Bill Belichick capable of being an LA guy? Do you think that Bill Belichick would be... How do you think Bill Belichick would do in LA? You think he'd do all right?
I think he'd do great retiring in LA. You know, I think he'd just get a house on the beach somewhere and just kick it. You know, coaching wise, it'd be interesting because I think he would enjoy how little attention is paid to the Chargers. It's not like a cutthroat beat that I think maybe the Boston one can be in a good way. It's competitive. Yeah, it's
for sure.
And so I think he'd enjoy that aspect of it. As you know, I'm on the record. Belichick's a bum. He's a Brady merchant. Andy Reid is better. Don't even put Bill Belichick's name in the same sentence as Don Shula, the actual greatest NFL coach of all time. And I hope he goes there. In an ideal world, Belichick goes there, and it's like he starts 0-8 and resigns. And it's like, oh, yeah, he lost it. And I'm not putting it out of the question, if only because, you know, what? Look at the Belichick coaching tree. When has it worked outside of New England? It hasn't really. And I'm banking on that being the case because he's kind of had carte blanche to do whatever he wants in New England. Are the Chargers – the thing is are the Chargers going to pay him $20 million a year? Like, maybe if he's going to cost a lot of money for wherever he goes next.
Maybe if Robert Kraft fires him, then he gets $25 million coming from Robert Kraft, and then the Chargers can pay him whatever they want.
Do you want to know the funniest thing that the funniest statistic from this NFL season? It's that the Patriots are paying Bill Belichick more this year than they ever paid Tom Brady in a single season. And they are trash. It's just, this guy's a joke, dude. It's real easy to mean mug and, you know, tell everyone to do their job when they got the greatest quarterback of all time circumventing the salary cap. We're definitely against some kind of NFL laws, but, you know, his trainer makes like $38 million a year, but Tom makes 15. Make that make sense. So, yeah.
It's like Shohei Ohtani, man. We're all just, we're all just lying now, you know?
Do you think Ohtani's lying? Do you think Ohtani's lying? Do you think there's something shady going on there?
If someone were to offer you, if they're like, Rohan, here's $700 million, but you have to wait 10 years before you start getting most of it. Do you trust that? Like, I don't know. Like, it's like whenever we play the lottery and it gets really high.
I like that you say this as we're all playing it all the time.
Do you play? How often do you play the lottery?
Literally never once in my life.
You've never played like Powerball?
I have not.
No? What?
I didn't. Sorry. I'm not from this country. Maybe it's just something that I don't know.
So when the Powerball gets really high, everyone in our entire neighborhood buys in. And then there's a collective. Some guy buys all the tickets. And then he says, okay.
You trust one guy to buy all the tickets?
One guy buys all the tickets.
Fascinating. Yeah.
And then he sends us a printout. He scans them all at work, sends us all the sheets. And then if we win, he takes off the top enough money to build like a new playground in our neighborhood for the kids. And then you just divide it by 25. I think it's usually like 400 families, you know? So then you just hard divide by 400.
400 families?
Oh, it's nuts. Yeah.
You mean like 400 million?
Like 400 families in our community that are buying
Powerball
tickets.
How do you even know 400 people? What is going on here? What do you mean? What neighborhood do you live in that contains four? Are you staying on a cult somewhere, dude? Like, what?
Well, it's like, you know, it's sort of like...
Do you know all these people?
We don't like the word cult, you know? It's sort of like...
No. Commune?
It's sort of like a gated friend's kid. No, no.
Do you know all the other 399 families?
No. No.
So what are you even taking home at that point? Like a couple mil?
Probably I think we did the math. It was like 4 mil. if we won the Powerball at its height. But we have strength.
Honestly, that's not even worth it. That's not even worth it.
It's chump change to you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Just play by yourself.
But the every
odds, you're not increasing your odds enough. Like, some math person's figured this out, but by playing with 400 families, you're not increasing your odds enough that it makes more sense for you to do that than go for the big money yourself.
You think
some
so?
Math person will confirm this, but I'm pretty confident.
We have a great math listener base. There was one time where Gary and I were getting deep into my take that in Family Feud, you should always pass, you shouldn't play, especially if there's a certain number of clues on the board. Do you watch Family Feud?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You don't know what the lottery is.
Always
so
pass. I'm aware of the Powerball. I just don't. How much money have you spent on the Powerball?
In my life?
Yeah.
Probably like $100.
That's it? I'm supposed to believe it's only 100?
200. Anyway, the take was that you always pass because no team ever sweeps the board unless it's a very easy four category, like, you know, what wives hate it when their husbands do this, you know, and this is easy. Four, like, don't put the toilet seat down, you know, blah, 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 yeah. Whatever. But if there's more than four categories and it's somewhat complex, that other team is not going to sweep the category. And then you're going to have like 15 minutes to sit there and to come up with one answer. And then you steal the whole thing. And so one of our listeners actually did the math on it. And I was right. You pass, you don't play. When Steve Harvey asked what you want to do, you said, we're going to pass, Steve. That's what
yeah,
I'm, you know.
I mean, I guess if you're a coward, that seems like a fun way to play Family Feud. You know, I'm there for the feud, brother. I'm not there to pass. I'm
not
there to
sitting
play.
Here taking a back seat to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I want the ball in my hands with 2 minutes to go, you know?
But anyway, my wife and I, whenever the Powerball gets big, we have a discussion. And we're like, listen, this money could change our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about what we're going to do if this somehow hits. And we always say we're going to take the money up front, the lump sum. So you get about half. With the taxes instead of taking the annuities where you get more throughout the rest of your life, because I don't know how long this is going to last, you know?
Well, the real reason to take the sum is if you take the, I believe the true reason to take the lump sum up front is because then you invest it right away and that's how you kind of beat inflation. So if you invested that $2 million in like an ETF immediately, you're in a good shape. I don't know how we're talking about this.
I need to know what an ETF is too, but we have to get back on track.
Yes,
so,
but right. Otani, it's weird, but like, doesn't he now like? Sorry, this is a complete sidetrack, and we'll move on. I just want to say that I saw someone tweet something very interesting that like he kind of like technically owns a percentage of the Dodgers, like if they don't pay him the money, like you know what I mean? Like they're in debt to him, so like there's something weird going on there, but. I have to believe he's going to get his money.
That would be sick if you just started walking in and firing people. You
know? Right, exactly, yeah.
Showing up at board meetings. But anyway, so this is a long way.
the
this
longest
is a long way
possible of saying.
That Bill Belichick won't fit in L.A.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to the top of the show, which is the Bills just destroying the Cowboys and striking fear into the heart of our Dolphins superfan, Rohan. So I've been workshopping this take, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. The Bills are dangerous because they are no longer America's sweethearts. The Bills
when were they ever America's sweethearts?
You don't think the Bills were ever America's sweethearts?
Oh, I guess they okay, sorry, I'm forgetting something kind of important that happened last year.
Right. Well, I think even pre that moment, like the Bills were you know, like right when that team started to get good with Josh Allen.
I've always blindly hated them so much that if you're telling me they were sweethearts at some point, I'll just have to believe you because that will have never been the case.
You have no room in your heart for any love for this.
I have a close friend whose husband works for the team and he sits next to the offensive coordinator. So every now and then he's shown on TV. And even though it would be like hugely financially beneficial for them for the Bills to make a Super Bowl run, even though, you know, I don't want their coaching staff to get replaced in any way, I'm still kind of actively rooting for their downfall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But I my
Thurman
take
Thomas
was
is a Dolphins legend, basically.
So my take was that even before Josh Allen, like right when Josh Allen started to get good, you noticed the PR turn where the Bills went from like they were like the I mean, you were a Deadspin guy. The Bills were the team of Deadspin, like chronicling all the stuff going on in the parking lot, smashing each other through tables, covering each other in condiments. There was like cocaine in the stands. Like that was fun.
Cocaine
wild.
In the stands, dildos on the field.
Dildos on the field.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Josh Allen got good. And then what happened? They became a LLC for Goodwill. Bills Mafia is donating money to everybody. Every player who Andy Dalton gets money for doing something to help them back into the playoff. Like everybody gets Tre'Davious White gets hurt, and so they give him $100,000. Like everybody, it's just force of goodwill after force of goodwill after force of goodwill. They're upending the Patriots. They're reshaping the division. The DeMar Hamlin thing happens, obviously, and the fact that you know you were able to come through that, I think that we were all collectively sympathetic for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's cast them a little bit as like, you know, they're a little bit of like they're villainous
think,
a little bit now,
I
right?
Think
like,
that
I don't know.
We talked about this last time we did the show, is backlash comes for everyone. Like, I think we're starting to see it with the Chiefs. The Chiefs are like the most likable, dominant team ever. You think about the quote-unquote dynasties, it's like the Warriors have a ton of haters in basketball.
Do they?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No one liked the Big Three Heat. All of America wanted that team to fail. The Patriots, obviously widely reviled and hated by most of the country. The Chiefs, I think people love Andy Reid. They love Patrick Mahomes. They love Travis Kelce. They were, you know, even as they were winning so much and basically beating everyone's favorite team, they were so likable. Mahomes was so fun to watch that I think it's one of the few times that a team could win that much and still be beloved by most casual fans or fans of other teams. We're starting to see it a little bit with them, right? I wouldn't say they're a villain, but like the Mahomes, the thing with the officials.
Yeah.
Two games ago, I think that really turned people off. You know, we don't have time to unpack all the reasons. Some of them, like, really terrible and unfair that the Kelce Swift thing gets, you know, people riled up or people upset.
Yeah.
But I think that's made some people just kind of like the combination of the overexposure. I mean, our old colleague Maggie Gray was talking about this. I wouldn't say the Chiefs are disliked. I still love Mahomes, and like the idea of him as like an underdog is actually kind of fun. But I think it's more of just like the cycle, right? The backlash comes for everyone. The Bills were so good. They had that crazy game. But now the cycle comes back to, well, how come you haven't won anything yet? You know, so I think it's less like villain and more scrutiny, like, hey, we anointed you guys, and now you haven't lived up to what we said you were going to be. What's wrong with you?
Yes. And your coach is kind of weird.
And your coach
just says weird shit.
Dropped one of the wildest 9/11 analogies of like, guys, our cover three defense is not good enough. You know, like if you need help getting out to the flat, let me.
Boy, do I have no.
Yeah.
So, how do you feel about this now? Because the Dolphins obviously demolished the Jets, and we'll bundle these two games together, and the Bills demolished the Cowboys. One win, slightly more quality than the other, but I would argue that the Dolphins win is important because we had Tua struggle a little bit when Tyreek Hill got hurt against the Titans. But, you know, and I wrote at the time, I wanted them to sit Tyreek Hill.
Me too.
Because after like a couple of drives, Tua started to play really well without Tyreek Hill against the Titans. Not really well, but good. He played fine. But then Tyreek Hill comes back into the game and you see more clearly how much easier he makes life for his quarterback. Like every time he runs somewhere, he clears out a massive swath of space for, you know, whether it's the tight end, whether it's Waddle, whether it's somebody else underneath, like he is as much a decoy, as valuable a decoy as he is a receiver. But when he didn't have him, I did think like by the third drive, Tua started to get into rhythm, started to play okay, started to move the ball. And so it's like, why wouldn't you want him to have to do this? Like, you don't need that Jets game. You're up two games on the Bills. You don't need to win that game. Why wouldn't you force him to try to work out the kinks against a good defense? And I think he did that. And I do like that he said, I think it was after the big touchdown to Waddle, he pointed to the camera and he said two, like he had two touchdowns, but also like I threw two touchdowns without Tyreek Hill. Like that to me was like his body language was like, people are saying I can't do this and check this out, you know?
Well, so yeah, there's some kind of inside joke that he said that celebration refers to with the team. This is what I think is so fascinating about football and the way it's discussed, because there's this whole thing this year, right? Like it's Tua the MVP, is Tyreek the MVP? Listen, I'm a huge Tua fan. I'm a huge Dolphins fan. It's not controversial to say in the grand scheme of football, Tyreek Hill is a better player than Tua Tagovailoa. I think that he is, you know, there's no question. The quarterback position is obviously way more important. But the one guy you haven't mentioned, and I didn't see a lot of people talk about after the Titans game, who returned Sunday was Teron Armstead.
True.
Who I think is you could argue, equally as important as Tyreek and Tua to the success of the Dolphins offense.
Very true.
And one thing that got lost in that Titans game, Armstead didn't play. Robert Hunt didn't play. Connor Williams tears his ACL in the middle of the game. You're down to four backup offensive linemen. Tua took a bunch of sacks in that Titans game. I think it was five total. That to me was a bigger issue than Tyreek being out, was they couldn't protect him. You saw that on the last drive. He got sacked on the last play of the game. They have an offense that, you know, for better or worse, it needs certain things. Like, I mean, obviously every quarterback needs good protection, but some are better working without it than others. I'd argue that's a bigger issue for Tua than the arm strength or anything else. It's the offensive line. And Armstead comes back on Sunday against the Jets. They have a whole week to game plan. And you could see they were like short passes. Tua had the fastest time to throw of the season on Sunday, under 2.10 seconds, which is crazy. Clearly, they made an effort. Wow. We're not even gonna get the offensive line involved in this game. It's going to be quick passes. They took the one deep shot to Waddle, and they connected. They set it up. But, you know, I think the offensive line, no one wants to hear it. It's just as important to the Dolphins' offense as Tyreek. Tyreek takes them to another level. He makes them elite, elite, elite when he's on the field. But they can score and they can play well without Tyreek if the protection is good. And Liam Eikenberg is like someone who no one really outside of Miami knows. He has kind of been the whipping boy on the offensive line. He's been a backup.
He's been playing like out of position, though. He's been in multiple spots. And
he played center on Sunday because the only other options at center were two guys they signed during the week who hadn't even practiced with the team. So it just goes to show how many moving parts there are. We should talk about the Bills, really, because that game against the Cowboys was crazy. And what, Allen only intercepted 15 passes? I don't think anyone thought. I mean, what's the strength of the Cowboys? It's been their defense, their D-line especially. But, I mean, the Bills just ran it down their throat. So you're right. I mean, it, statistically, whether it's EPA per play, whatever you want to look at it, the Bills have been as good as any team in the AFC. I think they still have a top 5 point differential. It's going to be fascinating watching the jockeying down the stretch here, Connor, because none of the Chiefs, Ravens, or Dolphins are going to want to play the Bills.
I know.
And that could be their first playoff matchup.
Do you, like, if you're, as a Dolphins fan, do you want to avoid the Bills?
It's funny, my brother and I were having this conversation yesterday, and I was like, dude, they should want no part of them. I'm rooting for the Colts every week, the Bengals every week, the Steelers, all these AFC teams that are kind of jumbling up that in the hunt graphic. The problem is, you know, unless the Dolphins win these next two games, that season finale is going to be for the AFC East. That's what it's going to come down to, which is crazy to think about after all this. I mean, unless the Bills somehow lose to the Chargers or the Patriots, I'd be shocked, but I think the season finale is going to come down for the AFC East.
God, that would be wild. But you're right. I think as much of an advantage, as scared as I would be to play Buffalo in, well, you wouldn't play them in Buffalo. You'd have to, you'd have to take them on the road. I wouldn't want to play Buffalo in Buffalo right now at this point, but I also wouldn't want to play Miami in Miami when, you know, you're a team from the Northeast and then you come down to Florida and it's balmy. Like, it's not, you know, the weather, you know, you're dealing with humidity again, and then you're dealing with a team that basically runs like a track meet. You know what I mean? Like, I do think that there's something intimidating about that when you flip it the other way. Like, you talk about physicality or the lack thereof, whatever it is. I do think that there's sort of that, the two sides to that coin. But I it's crazy to me that Miami has done pretty much all it can do. Like, I do think that, like, you know, they showed the graphic yesterday that, oh, like, they are, whatever, 0-3 against teams with, I think they've just lost to the only teams they've lost to are teams with a winning record. Is that true?
Except the Titans, but yes.
Yes.
They lost to the Chiefs, Eagles, and Bills, all not in Miami.
Yeah. So it's two-sided, but I do think Miami has won all, like, as a coach, you're not going to go undefeated, and they've won all the games that they were supposed to win to this point, and you've gotten yourself in a position where you can win the division. But I still would be, like, if the Bills can get their momentum going in the right direction, they've got a different offensive coordinator now, it seems like they're figuring things out in the running game. Like, if James Cook, obviously he's not going to run for, you know, he's not going to log 172 all-purpose yards in every game, but you know, at this point, I wonder if that is a team where you're like, oh, like, wouldn't it be weird if, as the villains now, this is how they make the run? This is when they start to...
Yeah, or it's kind of like, now that the expectations have tanked is really what it is. Now that now that people aren't putting them up there with the Chiefs. But it's funny that we're having that conversation about the Bills because, like, are you surprised the Ravens aren't being talked about? I mean, they have... No, it's going to be a great game. Ravens-Niners... Because couldn't I make the argument to you that the Ravens are the 49ers of the AFC? I mean, they have a lot of impressive wins. They're high up there in point differential. I mean, I thought Jacksonville, as a Dolphins fan who was rooting for the Ravens to lose last night, infuriating watching Jacksonville trip over itself over and over and over again in the game. But that was an impressive win by the Raiders. I'd buy into the Lamar MVP conversation. I thought Collinsworth said something on the broadcast that's so true, which is like, how do you quantify the fact that it's impossible to sack Lamar Jackson?
Right.
And like, that won't show up in a box score. It won't even necessarily show up analytically, but he just makes backbreaking play after backbreaking play. But yeah, I mean, I feel like the Ravens, the 49ers seem like a cut above everyone else. I don't know that I even put the Ravens in that category, and I guess we'll find out. But how can we talk about the AFC and not talk about them as kind of the pretty solid favorite right now?
That is, I mean, that's the Super Bowl I want at this point. I know you want a Dolphins 49ers Super Bowl, which would be kind of cool. Be like retro.
I don't want to see the Niners. I want like I need some Cinderella NFC. I want Dolphins Buccaneers.
Yeah, you need Baker, like Dolphins Mayfield, yeah. Dolphins Commanders somehow. Yeah.
I need Baker to keep it rolling.
So let's get to the Ravens. We'll put a bow on this Bills Dolphins conversation by just, you know, you're admitting that you're scared.
Terrified. Don't want to see them. And beyond that, it's like, I can't even participate in the Josh Allen threw another stupid interception discourse because he owns the Dolphins. Okay. He owns the Dolphins. I'm comfortable saying that. You know, that's the truth. Those are the facts. So want no part of the Bills.
Ravens, 23, Jaguars 7. I mean, Lamar was just like, it's so weird because if you were to teach an alien about football and you would say that, okay, good quarterbacks, like an alien's able to download all this data and be like, okay, good quarterbacks throw for like 300 yards and three touchdowns, and that's a good game. Like Lamar, 14 of 24, 171 yards, a touchdown, a pick, 97 rushing yards. But it's the way in which all of this happens. Like you mentioned before, and it's, you know, I've said this a million times on the podcast, but he looks like a different quarterback. He looks so much more comfortable. He's throwing everything on schedule, on time. Like his release looks better. All of that looks better, but and it's leading him to be just such a more maddening player on third and eight. If you do well enough to get the Ravens into third and eight, that's like a third and four for every other team. Like he negates half of the distance. And it's crazy to me that, you know, he's just getting, we all kind of projected Lamar as sort of like a, you know, sort of star that's going to burn out kind of hot and bright and quick, but he's getting better. And he's just like, I think he's going to age really beautifully, you know? And it's awesome. I mean, it's why the Ravens caved during contract negotiations and handed him the bag, you know?
Yeah, and I'm happy. You know, he is from Florida. I wanted him to go to UM. He didn't. And I'm thrilled for his success.
Did you know about him in high school?
I just like recruiting, and I'm not someone who follows recruiting, but he was a big deal because UM missed out on him to go to Louisville.
Were you like DMing his Instagram when he was in high school and being like, go to Miami, dude?
Bro. I only learn about it when they like lose a recruit and then I get upset for like 20 minutes and then forget about it. I'm proud to admit I've never been on a recruiting message board and I never will in my entire life. And what's really funny to me about the Lamar success this year is, are you telling me no one went after this guy? You'll never convince me that the owners did not collude in the summer when it came to Lamar Jackson. You look at the Atlanta Falcons, who would be, what, running away with the NFC South if they had Lamar, but instead they made it a point to say, we're not going to go after him.
That was the funniest part.
Yes.
Like, every team in succession, like, so quickly was like, yeah, I'm not going after Lamar. We don't want Lamar. Yeah. It was the Falcons. It was the Commanders.
It's like, It was a joke.
Are you guys good with Desmond Ritter and Sam Howell?
It's also, listen, it's not like Lamar doesn't have any advantages. I think he has one of the best head coaches in football. I think Mark Andrews is fantastic. Obviously, he's hurt right now, but Isaiah likely stepped up and been great. But it's also, there's been so much said about Mahomes and what the Chiefs have done to him this year. And, you know, are they serious with Kadarius Toney? That's been Jackson's entire career.
Yeah.
That's been, you know, it was a big deal that they signed Odell Beckham coming off his second ACL tear, and he didn't play all of last year. Like, that was their big free agent signing, and he's been good, but Lamar is asked to do so much with so little, and that's what's like part of the frustrating thing about the Lamar conversation is that people are like, well, we want him to be a passer, and it's like, well, then get him a proper receiving
corps. Get him receivers, yeah.
So, you know, and Flowers has been good. Again, I'm not trying to insult the guys that they have, but he's asked to do so much with so little, and the way people, whether it's Herbert or Mahomes, are kind of like, the receivers are letting him down. Lamar's asked to do so much for that team, and I think he delivers. So they're formidable, man. We haven't even talked about their defense, which has been putting up historic numbers, you know, getting compared to the 2000 Ravens in some ways. They've been really, really impressive.
I'm waiting for Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, to get hired so that every bad talk radio caller will call into his new city and call him Mike McDaniel. And yeah. Be like, this Mike McDaniel guy's got to go. And it's like, no, Mike McDaniel coaches the Dolphins. Ah! You know, but I was disappointed last night only because if you're the Jaguars, this is the game that you have at home. Sunday Night Football, which I don't really make that much of the stage, but you have arguably the second or third best team in the league mm-hmm. in your house. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence, you have that. So you have right before the half, they did my least favorite NFL thing, which is you have no timeouts left. You complete a pass. And okay, so let me set this up. There is... I sound like an old
while you friends. Set this up, I just want to say how disgusted I was in the Jaguars' performance last night as someone who needed them to win. Just so infuriating to watch. Yeah. And also, Trevor Lawrence, I was texting some friends. I was like, why is he bouncing every throw on this last drive? Like, I mean, he threw one pass over the middle of the field that was nowhere close to his intended target. And of course, they announced after the game he's in concussion protocol. And I just want to say real quick, like, the same thing happened to Zach Wilson yesterday where they were like, he's dehydrated. He has a head injury. No, he doesn't. Psych, he has a concussion. What happened to like all the rule changes they made after what happened to Tua last year? Like, I remember Teddy Bridgewater taking like a hit on the first play of the game in New York. And they were like, oh, you're done. The spotter said you stumbled a little bit.
Yeah. The Skylar Thompson
And that
Thompson
hasn't
era.
Happened since. And I'm not saying this is like, they're out to get the Dolphins. I genuinely thought these rules had changed. And it's kind of scary that two QBs yesterday seemingly continue to play with a concussion.
You're right. And it's one of those things where, you know, you fix it in the moment because everyone's like, they got to stop this. And the NFL's like, yeah, we're stopping it. And then they're like, okay, all right, we're fine now. We're good. But
anyway, you wanted to set up a Jaguars.
So yeah, about 30 seconds left. They complete the pass that gets them into first and goal. And Trevor Lawrence is doing the thing where he slaps on the helmet. And at that moment, I'm sitting there on my couch and I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's not going to spike it.
I couldn't believe they didn't spike it. I got up and walked away for a second. So they're going to spike it. Let me grab a drink real quick. And then I come back and I'm like, the half's over.
The universal sign for spiking it is always just like you pantomiming throwing something at the ground. And I'm like, okay. And then, but he's patting himself in the helmet. And I was like, oh my God, he's not going to spike it. He's really not going to spike it. And, you know, I applaud the fortitude that
it
takes.
But if you're going to do that, the pass has to be into the end zone and it has to be either incomplete or caught in the end zone.
Yes. And instead, I mean, just a quick, and it was funny, like a quick out in bounds, and like the Ravens, I couldn't believe it. They were just like, they were just standing there like, oh my God, like this is the play. And, you know, like everyone was covered, you know, and it's not like you had necessarily.
Doug Peterson, I thought, you know, our good friend Mitch Goldich, a.k.a. Philadelphia man Mitch, you know, spent years telling me Doug Peterson, big balls, Doug, blah, blah, blah. Look at what Dougie P is going to do. Fake quarterback, pass to the quarterback in the end zone, Philly special. Down two scores in the fourth quarter and he punted. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Like, the lack of, well, this is the right thing to do, but just to reference the Chargers game too, back on Thursday Night Football, when you're down 42-0 and you score, like I think the first, you know, whatever the first score was, it was, you know, 56-7 whenever you hit that long pass to Josh Palmer in that quiet stadium, you have to, like, you can't kick off. You have to onside kick. Like, what?
So
why aren't you trying to win the game?
There's like a window.
No.
So it's like if the game's within three scores, like you do. If it's like if it's over, it's like the valley or some kind of window. But like after a certain point, it goes back to it doesn't matter.
No.
I'm pro giving up if you're down 50 points, basically.
So you're covering an NBA team and you're just cool. Like I hate. I watch real basketball, which is college basketball, and like Purdue men's hoops. Yeah, but it drives me nuts when And I feel like this is less true of the NBA, although I watched a Knicks Wizards game this year, and that was the end of a Knicks Wizards game, and that was the first live NBA action that I'd caught probably since like the Cavs Warriors finals. Mm-hmm. I watched them at Buffalo Wild Wings, like back when that was a thing, back when I used to like go out and do things, and I hate when you're down like 8. And you just take a layup. It's like, no, man, you got to launch threes. If there's like 50 seconds left and you're down 8, you launch threes. Or if you're like, you just constantly have to be launching threes. You have to go for it. You have to convince me that you care.
That is frustrating. I'll let go of that one. Fair enough.
Yeah. I just think a massive missed opportunity for the Jaguars, who convinced everybody that they were this trendy Super Bowl favorite.
Not me.
Not you. Not me. You know what? A lot of... If you talk
they just,
to...
They were sprinkling a lot of masala on Trevor Lawrence this year. And as you know, I am praying for the downfall every non-Tua quarterback because of the disrespect they put on my sweet, sweet throwing Samoan. And, not impressed by Trevor Lawrence just dropping the ball on the ground yesterday for the Ravens to pick up.
I know. That was the other thing. Costly turnover, the issues before the half, and now you sit at 8-6, and at one point I went along with people saying that they were a trendy Super Bowl pick, because if you talk to a lot of gambling experts, they will say that this is the year to bet on someone like Trevor Lawrence to go. It's a quarter. It's a guy on his rookie deal, and the team basically has a very high ceiling. Like, what if Trayvon Walker?
I mean, listen, they got talent. Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker.
What if all these guys
Ridley
max out 1 year?
Well, last night, right?
Yeah,
right.
And they still could get hot in the tournament. You don't know, but anyway, I just thought that was it was very disappointing. I wish that they would have scored more. And made it interesting. That's all.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of a team that did make it super interesting, the Browns beating the Bears. I said last week on the show,
the Flacco-sants.
I'm wondering what you think of my take. So I grew up a Browns fan. I renounced my Browns fandom. You didn't know that?
No.
Okay, so I didn't have a favorite team, and then I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, so I hated the Steelers and I hated the Eagles. Was never going to do that. I had a friend who was a Giants fan who was really annoying about it, and like proximity wise, was probably the closest to the Giants just based on Giants and the Eagles. and that whole thing just bothered me, didn't like it. And so I said, the only fair way to do this is to just pick the next team that comes into existence, right? And at that point, there was the Jaguars and the Panthers. And so we were going through like a fun expansion period of the NFL. And I was like, okay, there's going to be another expansion team. I'll just hang out until then. So it was the Browns. And so I jumped on board, bought it. My mom bought me a Tim Couch jersey. Like, I was ready to go. And I was excited about it. Enjoyed my time being a Browns fan. Had a little party at my house the year that they lost in the playoffs to the Steelers in 2002.
The Derek Anderson season?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Kelly Holcomb.
Yeah, Kelly they had some hoopers.
Yeah, it was Kelly Holcomb against the Steelers. He was playing with like a broken leg, and Bruce Arians was the offensive coordinator. It was a wild time. Butch Davis was the head coach.
Miami legend. Yeah.
So I renounced my Browns fandom upon the decision to bring in their franchise quarterback via trade. And so I'm out. I'm happy being out. I let my kids pick a new team. We did a whole podcast about it. We're Bengals fans now. Very exciting. We enjoy the life of a Bengals fan. Jake Browning has been very fun for our house.
Fantastic.
But I will say this. I said, if I would go back, because my kids have like some Brown stuff that they don't want to get rid of, that stuffed animals. And right, tough, right, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I'm not just going to be like a weird dad and like chop the heads off of the stuffed animals and throw them away because I don't like a personnel move that they made. But I did say that if the Browns...
I do know a good speech you could give your kids if you're trying to motivate them one day.
To be Bengals fans or...
No, just in general, if you're looking to like a motivational speech.
To get rid of your stuffed animals?
It could be anything.
All right, let me hear it.
Anything that calls for organization...
Let me hear it.
You're not picking up the joke I'm trying to make. It's fine. It's fine.
Yes.
Well, let me start here. What do your kids know about 9/11? Yeah.
I just got it.
No. It was a reach by me.
Continue. No. It was good. No, your comic prowess is just, it outpaces me just a little bit. But that's why I have you on. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to get better. Right. But I told Albert last week that if the Browns were to cut Deshaun Watson and then to give Joe Flacco a 5-year, $230 million contract, I would become a Browns fan again because I think that that would be great. And there's part of me in here. I wrote at the beginning of the year, Dorian Thompson Robinson had a really good Hall of Fame game. And I was writing that, like, God, wouldn't it be funny if like he ends up just like crushing it, you know, and then Deshaun is not that good and you paid all this money for this controversial human who was accused of all these horrible things just to have the 5th round pick out of UCLA be better than him. But it's even funnier if it's Joe Flacco, who
it's much funnier.
Just like hanging out in South Jersey, like doing nothing, like hoping that somebody would call.
Joe Flacco is the guy you see in the Madden free agents and you're like, that guy's still in the game?
Yeah.
It's like, I'll sign him just so he gets a Super Bowl ring, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was still in the game. It's pretty cool that they left him in there. that's Flacco. The Browns have had a wild season. What are they, 5 wins in 1-score games or 3 points or less? Didn't they beat Seattle on the road? They beat the 49ers with P.J. Walker.
Yes.
You know, even if the Niners were missing Debo and Trent Williams in that game, that's a fantastic win. That's an impressive coaching job. I don't know how sustainable it is, but that's not the point. Like, you just got to win the games on your schedule and win them any way you can. They've done that. I'm with you. I didn't want the Dolphins to trade for Deshaun Watson. After everything came out, and it was very disconcerting the way the Browns handled all that with the guarantees in his contract, etc. And they somehow managed to become likable again, and it's almost entirely due to Joe Flacco.
It's so funny because, like, the fans, like, I wrote yesterday that, because we're taping this on Monday morning, I wrote on Sunday night that, you know, everyone talks about, like, every organization likes to come out and beat their chest and be like, it's the entire organization. I'm like, no, this is the head coach, because your brain trust, air quotes, has been together since the end of the Hugh Jackson era. And so during that time, you've had like kind of 3 or 4 different GMs, but Paul DePodesta has always been there. And like, you did some really good things, like take Myles Garrett, even though everybody wanted Mitch Trubisky. Imagine if they took Mitch Trubisky over Myles Garrett, by the way. And, you know, Myles Garrett is one of the five best players in the NFL this year. Okay, mm-hmm. That was great. But you also took Baker Mayfield, and then you cut him. And, you know, there's all these weird, you know, most of the things that you did were good. Some of the things that you did were bad, or ill-advised or whatever.
Hey, they did make the playoffs and win a playoff game with Baker, though, so they have that.
And they did, yeah. All along, the boat started going in the right direction when they hired Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
They're just being like, okay, figure this out. Here's PJ Walker. Oh, I guess Deshaun's not playing this week.
He's like, it's been a real MacGyver job. And so here's a pencil, a chewing gum, and 6 feet of yarn. And he's like, all right, beat the Seahawks on the road.
Yeah.
What next? Yeah.
And then now you've got Joe Flacco, who, you know,
he was throwing some throws yesterday, man.
And even some of the picks, one of the picks was bad, I think, if I can remember correctly. And
one was like a receiver dropped it, though, right into.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, his stats are not bad, and he's throwing dimes. Like,
bro,
he is.
The throw to Njoku, the throw to Amari Cooper, those were big time throws.
Bananas. And so it's. I'm just at this point, I'm loving this. Completely bizarre world fantasy.
This is insane. Could I talk you into a Cleveland Super Bowl run?
No. Yes, you could.
I mean, Flacco's got the experience. That is, the Browns have the perfect defense to just ruin a playoff game.
Yes.
It's like you get two turnovers and immediately it's like, oh man, we're on our heels. We're down 10-0, but it feels like 30-0 because Garrett is destroying our left tackle or right tackle today. That's going to be an interesting team to watch.
Yeah, it's like, and what happens if you have that defense, and then the same thing happens to the Browns like it did in their playoff win over Pittsburgh, which is, you know, first snap goes over the quarterback's head, you know, you get a quick score, and then all of a sudden, you know, and then you get a good sustained drive with Flacco, it's 10-0, 13-0. That game's over. It's done. Yeah. And you know, who's to say that they can't do that a couple times in a row? But the funny part is,
I want to see the Chiefs offense go into that Browns defense. That would be interesting.
I just want, my goal in life is to be a Browns beat reporter the day after they win the Super Bowl, and they're at the parade is about to start, and you raise your hand and you ask for the microphone and you say, okay, who is the starting quarterback week one of 2024? And, you know, everyone could say, oh, I'm ridiculous. You're ridiculous, ridiculous, you know, but same thing, you know, I mean, this happens in life, you know, I mean, it happened with the Eagles, and Carson Wentz was never the same after that. And Nick Foles came back, I think, the year after that and backed them into the playoffs again.
Yeah.
And almost won them a playoff game, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they won a playoff game, then
they
lost
won
the
a
Vikings
playoff
that
game.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know. Like I just love chaos. And
yes,
I would
yes.
love for the Browns to somehow try to sell me on like a Joe Flacco, Deshaun
Joe
Watson.
Joe Flacco making the AFC championship game is like what I'm actively rooting for. Browns Dolphins AFC championship.
You know what you would have to do if you're the Browns? I just thought of this. If Joe Flacco took you to the Super Bowl and won it, you would have to take him into like a back alley somewhere, and you would have to hand him a briefcase with like $50 million in it. And you would just be like, you need to retire. Like you have to.
I think he
away.
Would. Or you what if you, would? What if you pull the Jameis and say, you hand him a briefcase with nothing in it and say, this is the only thing standing between you and another Super Bowl win. Nothing. And you know what? That's not even the weirdest motivational story we've talked about on the podcast today.
But you'd have to, like, you know, and I know.
I think he'd go out on top. I don't even think they'd have to worry. He would retire if they won the Super Bowl. Come on.
If he won the Super Bowl, he'd retire. And then it would totally uncomplicate things. And then he would come back the next year when Deshaun was like 3-4.
Or just do what the Patriots did and pay one of his close associates, put them on the payroll, and then you don't have to pay your quarterback what he's actually worth, and you can continue to win Super Bowls that way.
Good win for the Browns, I thought. Yeah. The Bears, to me, are establishing themselves at least as a quality defense. You know, they beat the
Fields
Lions.
Fields has looked good.
Fields has looked really good. I mean, gosh, we talked about this last week too, but he's getting to the point where, like, I might be able to talk myself into keeping him again.
I think you draft. I think just based on the value of the rookie contract alone, you draft Caleb Williams and you trade Fields for I mean, he's also putting his trade value way up. I mean, the Falcons with Fields. I mean, the Commanders with him. I think that I think there'd be somewhat of a bidding war, right?
You could get another. You could get another
first, right? And then it's like you could have three really good first round picks. New GM, presumably new coach, possibly.
That's what it's all about.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Saturday games are just messing me up. Like, so we'll just run through. I mean, so the Lions demolished the Broncos 42-17. The Colts beat the Steelers 30-13. And then there was the Bengals. That's, you know, Bengals beating the Vikings 27-24.
The Jake Browning revenge game.
Dude, I know. He's just a boss.
He's been playing out of his mind, man.
I remember watching when Joe Burrow hurt himself in the preseason and got the calf injury, and then you had Jake Browning play a couple of games, and you're like, this guy can get rid of the ball pretty quickly, you know, like he's doing okay. And all of a sudden you're like, all right, what's going to happen? Because now no teams, I mean, okay, the Chiefs have a quarterback, but almost no one has a quarterback anymore. And so why not, you know? It's just, you know, I don't know. I think the Bengals could.
Is that Tua disrespect?
I guess it's sort of backhanded Tua respect a little bit. Tua disrespect a little bit. So here are the quarterbacks.
Even though you didn't see what he did without Tyreek, put up 30 on one of the best passing defenses in the NFL. That's all right.
All right. So we got the AFC quarterbacks are Lamar, elite. Patrick Mahomes, elite. Tua.
I mean, look. Tua's not elite, but he can, you know, he can be in charge of an elite offense.
He can be in charge. I like that. He can be in charge of an elite offense. Trevor Lawrence. And then from there, you're just like, the rest of the quarterbacks in the playoffs are going to be Joe Flacco, Jake Browning, Gardner Minshew.
Possibly Josh Allen.
Possibly Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Matt Stafford.
I think anyone can get anyone in the AFC. I think the Ravens are slightly better than everyone, but with how bad the Chiefs' offense has been, I think anyone can get anyone in the AFC.
Nick Mullins. When you have, Baker Mayfield.
Think of the coaches, too. I mean, the Bengals are really well coached defensively, have shown in the playoffs they can come up with good game plans. The Browns obviously have a fantastic defense. It's a one-game sample. Anything can happen, and I think any of these teams are capable of knocking the other one off. If they can get a couple things to go their way.
What do you, did you watch the Saturday games? Are you a Saturday game guy? Or are you
I mean, I don't mind it. It's now it's like next week. It's like there's three Monday Christmas games. There's a bunch of Sunday games. I'm like, I didn't even know there were this many NFL teams. I was like, how did they manage to spread this out between Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday? I didn't mind it. You know, the matchups weren't very good. That Bengals Vikings game ended up being by far the most entertaining. It was whatever. Our colleague Jimmy Trano's like, you know, made it his life mission now to complain about the primetime games. Although I am our good buddy Philadelphia man Mitch makes a good point that there's just like not enough good teams to make
there's not
every primetime game a good one. So I mean, I don't mind it. It's something to have on. And you can, for me at least, I can check out pretty easily if the games are bad. So
yeah. But big comeback for the Bengals. They were down 17-3 in the third quarter, and that game ends up 27-24. But you know, so we have a lot of like anonymous gunslingers.
Real quick, I just want to ask you, we've been talking for so long about so many things. What did you make of the Eagles coaching change? I mean, we're not gonna, maybe we'll get some answers tonight, but I'm just curious what you made of, what's going on there with the Matt Patricia becoming the defensive play caller, but not the coordinator, apparently?
Yeah.
Allegedly, reportedly?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think it's really hard when you're not a rocket scientist or you're not an astronaut. What did he major in? let me see. Matt Patricia, rocket scientist. He majored in aeronautical engineering at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Okay. I think when there's a guy like that in the building, it's hard to be the other guy. You know what I mean? And
you think really?
Yeah, because you know, no matter what, if you're calling plays and then there's someone like hyper intelligent and potentially manipulative, I don't know, behind you. Talking
widely
to the head coach.
Hated by his former players.
Yeah, being able to like talk to the head coach and be like, "Well, you know, I would have done this." You know,
well, in space school, we would have, you know.
No. You know what you should do is you should you know eliminate gravity.
I was gonna say anyone tell this guy about gravity? You know.
if I were him, I would just like have a separate channel with the coach, and I would just start reciting different formulas in physics, just like, well, right. You know, what he should have done is try to find the velocity of this. And this is how you do
exactly.
That based in physics. But so I probably, you know, coaching staffs are notoriously a mess, right? Everywhere. And I, you know, people had told me before the season that they liked Sean Desai as a potential head coaching candidate one day. I still believe that. I do think that
it's
that's
just
true.
A weird move to make this point in the season. I get the defense has been slipping, but they're acting like a team that's like 6-8, not, you know,
yeah,
at the top of their conference. So,
and, you know, but you have to remember too that Nick Sirianni, very quietly like benched himself as a play caller, and handed it over to Shane Steichen. And, you know,
and also how much of this has to do with the fact that Jalen Hurts been 100%?
Yeah.
You know, he's on the injury report finally, but they're saying illness. Like, I don't know. That seems to go a long way here too.
I know. I'm looking forward to the Eagles game tonight because this is a very
you love birds and it's the Eagles and the Seahawks.
I do love bird teams. Yeah. My one fantasy league that I care about. We backed into the playoffs due to a tie-breaking regulation that was instituted to punish us for backing into the playoffs the year before due to an even more archaic tie-breaking.
I see. And if you win this fantasy league, you share the money with 400 families, right?
Everybody gets a piece.
Yeah.
And so tonight, like we just played it really well. And we have an 89% chance of winning according to that stupid arbitrary tracker thing, right?
The New York Times poll meter. You have
it's
a
like
89,
the CBS
yeah.
sports yeah. line predictor, whatever right. it is. But so he has Jalen Hurts and I have AJ Brown and we're up by 25 points, right? So Jalen Hurts would have to have an otherworldly game, which is possible. Jalen Hurts loves Michael Jordan. I could totally see him channeling a flu game and being that person coming out and ruining my fantasy season, I'm all for it. I like a good football game. But there is something like, there is a haughtiness to when you think you're about to win an important fantasy matchup, watching the game play out, and you're just like swirling your, you know, swirling your brandy, and you're just like your wife who doesn't care about it at all. And you're just like, this is why we made the move to go with, AJ Brown. You know, he was our keeper, and, you know, we really liked him. And, you know, in other weeks, I'm just totally melting down because we're in the middle of a 4-game losing streak. But I will enjoy the Eagles game regardless tonight. I think I'm very much looking forward to that. Before we go, let's do a quick little lightning round. I just want one line from you or me on each of the teams that we didn't get to yet. So 49ers destroy the Cardinals 45-29. Christian McCaffrey had 3 touchdowns. He just looks like a boss. Brock Purdy had 4 touchdowns. They're just awesome. I don't know. What's your 49ers take?
Didn't look ahead. That's impressive. Didn't look ahead to that Ravens matchup at all. They're by far the Super Bowl favorite. That's it. That's all you can say about
them. Yeah. Rams Commanders 28-20. Rams finally do it. I said before the season the safest bet was that Sean McVay was going to hit the over on the 6.5 win total that the Rams got out of Vegas. Boom.
The way people have talked about Stafford this year, I thought they'd be a little bit better than 7-7. I know that he has been dealing with some injuries, but I hope they get in the playoffs. To me, it's fun when they're good.
I agree. I want the Rams in. I just think that their coaching brain trust is so smart, and they're able to just outthink people. And then you have Puka Nacua, who's a lot of fun. Cooper Kupp. Like, I love that team. I think that they're only going to get better. And next year they have cap space again. Just fun all the way. I hope they trade their first round pick. I never want them to make a first round pick again. Panthers 9, Falcons 7. I mean,
Can we be sure that game happened? Was anyone there to witness it?
I mean, if you're Arthur Smith, like, how do you let that happen?
Joke. Absolute joke. I mean, I have no respect for that franchise after what they said and did regarding Lamar this year. And I know that some people like Arthur Smith, but what they're doing with Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson, although he's getting the ball a little bit more lately, what a joke. I mean, what a joke. I think Heinicke's better than Ritter. I guess that he started one game and got hurt, but, you know.
I mean, the funny part is that, I mean, the Flacco thing, so I live in New York and everybody's like freaking out right now. They're like, how do you let someone like Flacco just sit around and not pick him up and Zach Wilson, blah, 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 blah. But that conversation's probably happening everywhere. Like, Flacco probably has the Falcons at like 10 and, you know, the Falcons probably have 9 wins if they have Joe Flacco right now.
Yeah.
Golly. But yeah, what an awful game.
Yeah.
I mean, when Cordarrelle Patterson scored on that end around, at the beginning, it was like the second quarter with like 4 minutes left. I was like, well, that's it. I mean, there's no more.
Right.
That's all. But you know, Chris Tabor, interim coach, manufacturing some wins. Good for them. Texans 19, Titans 16.
That was a fun game.
Case Keenum. I would love for CJ Stroud to come back and get hot with the Texans in the playoffs. That's like, that's very fun to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. Shout out to the Titans who keep battling. Will Levis took a nasty hit. I wonder, if Tannehill starts next week, but that was a fun game. Just real ridiculousness at the end too.
Yeah. You know, it's fun. Like, some of these games are good, and I think like we have to step back and just appreciate them for what they are, you know, and not like that these teams are all butt. And just stop worrying about it. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Last but not least, gosh, how did they get shoved into the final window here? Because this is Baker Mayfield just on fire. The Buccaneers and the Packers. I think, I said this before, I'll say it again. I think that the Buccaneers are just that one team that could get weirdly hot in the playoffs. I mean, because
Mike Evans is incredible.
Yeah.
They have an experienced coaching staff. The Packers, after that Chiefs win, to lose to the Giants and Bucks back to back,
I know.
Bucks one is more forgivable, I should say. But man, that was everyone just penciled them in for winning out the rest of the season. They're going to finish 11-6. Brutal back to back losses for the Packers. I know that, everyone I see tweeting about them wants them to fire their defensive coordinator, but
like, that's, you know, it's week 15.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You should have done that already. Unless you're the Eagles, yeah. And then you just covert taps. You have your
exactly.
You have your band security guard go into every room and just start firing people. Well, thanks, Rohan. This has been a lot of fun.
My pleasure.
So NBA is on Christmas. Everyone, but the NFL is now taking that over. That's ours now. Mm-hmm. That's our day. what are you going to do on Christmas now that the NFL has taken over your NBA?
No, holiday? I'll be watching basketball all day. I still think that we don't have to get into the particulars of the schedule. They could have done better, but I love watching 5 basketball games in a row. I really do. So
is Wemby on Christmas?
No, he's not.
Why is he's like the worst player in the NBA right now, right?
He's not, but he's on one of the worst teams.
I was on some deep stat NBA blogs. Did you know this? Hardwood paroxysm. Do you know that?
I know Matt Moore, yes.
Yes. And I read the headline of an article that said that the Spurs were the worst team in the NBA. So
that has very little to do with Wemby, but it's true.
It's because he has no meat on his bones. And
well, this doesn't work because Chet Holmgren's been fantastic, and the Thunder are one of the best teams in the NBA. So
true. All right. Well, before you prove me wrong, let's get out of here. Thank you so much for coming. As always, go Dolphins. We'll have Rohan on when they make the Super Bowl. You're coming to Vegas if they make it the Super Bowl, right?
Oh, without a doubt. We need to talk about me getting a credential for some of these home playoff games, but we'll discuss.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
See you, Connor.
Thursday, guys, we have the Matt and Gilberto show. Be sure to check that out, as always. And we're going to talk to you probably a little bit later during the week. Albert and I are probably going to chill out a little bit for Christmas. We'll come back and we'll recap those Christmas weekend games probably on Tuesday. So look for a later podcast that week. Please take some time with your family during the holidays to just enjoy, to chill out. Thanks as always for listening.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.